Call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors regular meeting 8:45, Wednesday, April 30th, 2014. Please stand for Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation: Jurgen Till, Dorn, Bauman, Lytle, Byers, Setzer. Next would be the consent agenda. And the consent agenda consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes of the committee meetings held April 14th, 2014, approval of the minutes of the board meeting held April 16th, 2014, approve all claims through April 30th, 2014 in the amount of $321,636.17, approve and place on file all correspondence received, approve specifications and call for bids on three culvert material projects, bids to be opened May 28th, 2014 at 9:15 a.m. Approve utility permit 993 to Kyle Spilker to trench an electric line located in the southeast quarter of Section 2 in the northeast quarter of Section, and in the northeast, I'm sorry, and in the southeast quarter of Section 3, Township 4 North, Range 5 East, and Blakely Township. Approve declaring a 1993 Crown Vic, VIN number 2FACP71W5PX181554 as surplus and calling for bids. Bids to be opened May 20th, 2014 at 9:30. That is the consent agenda, item 1 through 8. Need a motion to approve or disapprove or consider something separate.
Move.
Oh, Matt?
Yes, sir. Did you do some work for the county?
Again? Yeah. I'd like to have claim number 14050097 in the amount of $1,375.05 pulled and voted on separately, please.
Okay. Pull that claim. Jurgen, so I need a motion to approve items 1 through 8, with the exception of the claim Mr. Jurgens just spoke of.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer. Any further discussion? Vote 7-0 to approve. Now I need a motion to approve claim number 14050097 to Johnny's Welding. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Moved by Setzer.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion? Vote. 6 in favor. Jurgens abstained. All right. Next on the agenda, comments from the public and requests for future agenda items relative to the board. Scott, Doug. Committee reports, building and grounds, winter lights.
Building and grounds, Dave. We have several issues just to bring to the board's attention for future work.
Our migrators are back?
Not yet. We're keeping them off, I think.
So we're working on it.
Yes. We had Dave Jones, good morning. We had just a couple of things we talked about during building and grounds. On March 27th, we had a real strong gust of wind come through, and I noticed at that time we lost the shed roof and stuff. What I did notice at that time is there's a copper cap on the top of the tower that the wind lifted on the south side, so we do need to get that secured again, which shouldn't be that big of a deal, but unfortunately we're going to need a crane on the yard to get to it. So when we do that repair, we also have a stone on the east side of the building that needs some work done to it also. And so I did, we talked to NIRMA earlier about the other damage, and so I'm going to get a bid and talk to NIRMA again and see if that will be covered also. So, and the other thing we talked about, over the years, we've talked before about stone repair. I think it would be a good time to start really checking in to see what needs to be done. When we had the monument worked on the limestone out there, they used a product called Jean material, and that's only people that go to a school to learn how to use it are going to be able to use that product. I think that would be a good product to put on this stone over. When you get up higher, it's limestone and sandstone, and it's really starting to pop loose every winter. I keep seeing, you know, a little more damage. And when I did talk to this Greg Dennis when he did the monument, he said a lot of times what they do is if they could get a contractor and just come yearly over time and just do, you know, certain areas at a time. And as far as the tuck pointing, I don't know if that is in bad shape or not, but I think it would be a good time to start putting some money into the stone repair of the building.
And we've been putting that off, but we've looked at it as a whole and gotten bids, I think, to do the entire thing. But possibly we'll talk to these people, and if we can do sections a little bit at a time, possibly it will make it more affordable and we can pay as we go, but we don't have to do it all in one big lump. But we can take a look and see. But Dave's going to get somebody down. We'll building grounds will look at some of that.
They would not set up scaffolding. It would all be done off of a lift, I would think. But that's when we really notice, you know, when the scaffolding was up 4 years ago or whatever. When you're up close up there, there's a lot of areas where it is just popping loose, and there's some joints where it was tuck pointed, but then there was a caulking put in there, and those joints look like they need some attention too. So,
and we do have, just I remember we did this. Well, we started that 3 or 4 years ago, a county building sinking fund. So we've been kind of putting some money away to deal with some of these things so that, you know, if there's an opportunity to do that, whether it's this year or next fiscal year, we could operate out of that sinking fund's an opportunity. So.
Then the last thing, as far as the buzzard problem, we're trying everything we can to keep them off the roof. And so far we've had some pretty good luck. We got an owl decoy up there, and we actually have some. Rosie's collected the buzzard feathers whenever she takes a walk with her dog and stuff, and so we've got some buzzard feathers sticking out of his claws and stuff, so you can tell they're checking it out and kind of wondering. And we've got enough feathers also. We're going to make a decoy, and they say they're very scared of seeing their own dead somewhere, so we'll try that and maybe run up on the roof every once in a while and act like we're grabbing one. And they say they're very smart, so you have to play a lot of trickery on them. So.
We're going to patent this method and sell it, you know.
There's a YouTube video here somewhere.
Sell it to Windstream over there. John Daggerford is looking for
Yeah. Windstream ought to chip in on that one.
That's all I have. So,
thank you, Dave. We're lucky to have Dave as our courthouse manager. He does a wonderful job, and we're just very lucky. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, Gus has got a solution.
Have you seen him at Target practice, though?
Okay. Anything additional for equalization, Denny? Finance and insurance.
Finance. We've been talking for several meetings about financing our upcoming communication project, and we finally, I guess, got together as a committee and decided there was basically two options. We finance it 100% out of inheritance, or we finance part of it with a local bank and then take the rest out of inheritance and spread that out over so many years. And we had quite a discussion on what our inheritance fund has done this year. We started it basically at $1.5 million at the start of the year, and with the collections or whatever, it's grown to just short of $3 million right now. And because of all that discussion and everything, the Finance Committee is going to recommend that we take all of the financing for a communication project out of the inheritance fund. So that's what we're bringing forward to the board, and I know at some other time we'll approve that, and we can have more discussion then or whatever and stuff. So unless you have questions now, we're sure open to them now here or whatever. So.
And just to segue on that, I have had a discussion with Chief Deputy Klaus, and they will be bringing next meeting from Mike Jeffries. Hopefully a contract will go to Roger's office to look at for the actual agreement with a statewide system in conjunction with the equipment. So both will come to the next meeting, and in that time frame between now and the next meeting, there's Doug right there. He'll talk about it, but we'll be looking at taking action at that point. No later. It's got to be on the 14th in order to get everything ordered, if that's what we decide to do. So that information will be coming. Mike Jeffries is working on getting that to Roger. So.
And one of the other discussions we had, and we had quite a discussion on this too, and I talked to Doug yesterday about it, ordering all the equipment, and our finance committee had a discussion on the handhelds, I guess, specifically out of that list of equipment, and discussed the need and how many we need of the handhelds. And the finance committee, when we got done yesterday, and that's why I called Monday, I guess, and when I called Doug, I told him we were going to make a recommendation that we do 10 less handhelds. And Doug and I had quite a conversation yesterday again. And if you want to, you're sure more than welcome to get up and make some comments, because I guess we looked at it as cost and do we need them? And they look at, I guess, a different perspective and why they're proposing what they're proposing. So I told him I didn't want to spring it on him at the meeting today. I said this way he could have some time to think about it and come with his, yeah, not very much, but why they proposed. He did make the comment that these 52, they originally, in their proposal, they parted down from a higher amount and everything. So it's, go ahead.
The visual that you have here in front of you gives kind of a breakdown of overall on the project. It's broke down simply by divisions for the Sheriff's Office, Detention Center, and Emergency Management. And the total radios on the first page kind of shows the grouping of radios by department or by agency, I guess. If you flip to the second page for the Sheriff's Office, it gives the total portable radio number of 37. And it's broken down a couple ways there for commissioned deputies, basically, on this one for... We have a couple different things. At the top, you'll see it says administration, and then on the right-hand side, upper right, is commissioned jail staff. There'll be the sheriff and chief deputy for the administration on the roadside, and then commissioned staff for the jail with the lieutenant, which would be Lieutenant Shepherdson, and then your court sergeant or your special services sergeant, which is Sergeant Davidson, and then Corporal Searcy for the jail. Basically, we have our road division broken down into two patrol shifts with a sergeant on each shift, and then those deputies are broke down on days and night shift. Moving over to the part-time deputies, we have, you can see the current total numbers, and then you see in each box, you'll see like a kind of a peach or a lighter colored bordered deputy under each one of those. Each portable radio, there's of those peach ones, are figured in as one for any new hires, future deputies, anything that happens. If we have somebody that we hire on as a part-time deputy or a reserve deputy or anything in those lines, and then the reserve deputies is our 10 allotted slots that we have by board agreement quite some years ago. In the part-time deputies with that one peach-colored one and under the reserves, now currently we have three reserve deputies, four in-process or candidates that we're going through. That would be a total of seven. Then that leaves three open slots currently in reserves if they were all filled with the current process that we're into. Keeping in mind that you might say, well, that leaves three open there, and it does. Some of the reserve deputies in our part-time slot, we can transfer some of those part-time guys who are maybe a little bit less active and don't maybe work more than 4 hours a month, for example. We can move those part-time deputies into a full-time reserve slot and then take and put more active part-time deputies into those part-time deputy slots. So it's moving people back and forth to where the needs are most best met for the sheriff's office, so we can get the most bang for our buck, I guess, hiring some part-time deputies versus maybe some full-time. And some of our part-time guys currently, they do things, for example, like a couple of them always work court over here back and forth instead of having full-time guys fill those spots to try and save some money that way. So if you want to flip the page over to the detention center, I want to comment on that first.
Yes, sir.
Doug. I'm not convinced, and in our discussion we had this, and I think it needs to be brought out, that our part-time and our reserve deputies, every one of them needs to have an expensive portable radio at all times. And part of them, when the positions aren't even filled, and what can we do to transfer back and forth? And when you're talking $5,000 or $6,000 a piece for those radios, we're talking an awful lot of money for people that might just be sitting around. They might work 4 hours a month or something.
Correct.
And I think we need to look at how we can transfer and use some good common sense instead of buying 18 radios for people that are part-time or reserve and might not ever in the whole world use them. Can we make that argument? Oh, there's that one time when we need them, and I'm sorry, I think we need to take the risk. But I wanted to throw that out there because we had that discussion in our committee.
Sure.
So, Doug, would the reserve deputies just sit across the street on a charger, or do they actually have it at home with them?
No. They all have a radio that's issued to them. I guess I have a couple talking points that I'd like to throw out, if it would be all right. We've had some discussions back and forth, you know, and I guess over a period of this, you know, 6 to 8 months that we've done this, and we've kind of gone back and forth on numbers a little bit and stuff, and to where we're at on this. And I guess the numbers that you have before you is what we feel are relevant, and that's what we're recommending. Now, obviously, you can do something different. That's obviously your choice. The number one issue that's been revealed in every accident after action review for either incidents or exercises has been communications issues. The issue surrounding that has either been poor communication or the lack of communication. Currently, emergency management has between 25 and 26 portable radios. That's give or take one. I'm not real sure on those exact numbers, but it's within one, I think. All the portable radios during exercises or major events have been issued out, and we were still short radios, causing members to group up and share portable radios, so share one portable radio among multiple members or groups. Examples of this would be when we've had searches that we did during the times when we had extensive large group searches for Ann Kelly. We had a missing person search with Marshall County, Kansas Sheriff's Office, the Hallam Tornado, and certain members that have been deployed for different disasters or events through emergency management. One of the points, I guess, that I want to point out, and it's probably not it probably is the obvious point, is if the funding that is going to come out of inheritance, and we do find later that we need to order, you know, either one or two at a time, you know, to get our numbers where we feel that they need to be based on current staffing and stuff, that money could possibly come out of the general fund, then out of the sheriff's budget, I guess. So that's one thing I'd like to at least throw out there for consideration, that is that. The Homestead grant, and I don't know, I guess I didn't hear if that was touched on or not
yet. Has not been yet.
To bring everybody up to speed a little bit on this, and I brought it up at the committee meeting on Monday, this is something that's kind of been in the works a long time, but we hadn't received any word back. Mark Mines had actually started this a long time ago, way before he ever left. He had worked with Mark Engler out at the Homestead out there. And the Homestead, they wanted to do something to contribute something towards this radio project early on, you know, but they didn't know, you know, what they could really do, if they'd get approved, etc. They had put in for a $50,000 grant, and didn't hear anything back the first time, so they resubmitted it back, and I think it was about the middle of last week, if I remember right, I'm not sure, when Mark Engler had called me and said that they had been approved for a $50,000 grant. The caveat with that being, it's got to go towards radio equipment for this project. So there's some details that have to be worked out in that, as far as a resolution to get with the county attorney and stuff to make it all appropriate and stuff. So I guess with that being said, and we're concerned, and I know Myron had kind of thrown the numbers between 10 and 15 out there, you know, and if it would be 10 or if it would be 15 or back to 10, would be about $58,000. With that being said, I guess the $50,000 grant money would reduce that $58,000 number down to $8,000 out of a, you know, potentially three-quarter million-dollar project. reserve deputies a little bit to touch on that. By statute, any time that they're activated or deployed, whatever terminology you want to use, they're required to be in contact with a full-time deputy when they're activated. Radio communication is our primary means of communication while they're on duty. Reserves, they can live in a variety of geographical locations. They can be activated at any time, responding from a variety of areas for planned or unplanned events. Planned events are much easier to manage, and having them report to the location of an event and check out radios is a manageable task, providing that we have radios available to issue them, I guess. If we say we want to cut 10, then we cut 10. If you want to cut 15, then you cut 15, and then, you know, we do whatever we have to do to make it work, I guess. But I guess when we do have those people working, we need to be able to at least provide the communications that we need with them when they're on duty. And I guess that's the biggest thing. It's not always that they're constantly being used. It's when they are, though, that it's a necessity. And I guess that's probably the biggest thought on that as far as on-duty personnel.
Doug, ballpark it for me. How many times, say, last year was the reserves used? Were the reserves called or used?
The short answer is they're used every month. We make them work a minimum of 4 hours every month so that they can keep up on, you know, stay active, you know, and things of that nature to be on top of their game. We use reserve radios for a variety of different things, I guess. For prisoner transports, Kent Crowdy, we use him every month, multiple times a month to do that, to go out on transports and stuff like that. Then when they have a regular meeting once a month and then training. And then.
Do the reserves do the transportation?
They do some of it, yes.
Some of it, but not all of it.
No, we have
a transport. How much of it that they do?
I don't know. Sheriff, could you? If we have prisoner transports, I mean, Kent Crowdy, we usually use a transport officer, a reserve officer, I mean, for maybe some of the longer trips, like out to Lexington and back or things of that nature. Our regular transport officer to the jail, he does a lot of transports to D&E and different, and today they're going up to D&E to pick another one up at some point. So that's.
But he's not a reserve or a part-time.
The transport officer, he actually is a reserve officer, but he works full-time for the jail. So I don't want that to cloud the picture. His full-time job is a transport officer. He works a regular shift, 8 hours a shift every day. But by statute, he's also a reserve deputy, and he has law enforcement powers.
So here we have a radio for him one place and a radio for him in another place.
No. No, the 10 allotted numbers are for the allotted number by the board of 10 total reserves.
Okay. I'm just getting dumber and dumber by the minute.
Well, you can say that, but it is confusing, and it is confusing to look at all these numbers and go through this, and we've been confused a lot through this project. But that's why we try to break this down by groups and divisions so that we can simplify it the best we can to keep accurate tracks and counts of what we need.
Okay. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I've got, if we cut this by, say, 10 or 15 radios, mm-hmm. and we go back and buy them at a later date, say one or two at a time, since it is a state bid, with the exception of the special deal they have going this month only, wouldn't we get the same pricing?
I don't know the answer to that. We would get state bid pricing, yes. It probably wouldn't be this pricing, but I mean, I couldn't guarantee it would or wouldn't, I guess.
And then isn't there also an issue with reserve deputies where we may not be able to, because of the requirements, their numbers are going to be cut down, we're not going to be able to refill the positions, we can keep our guys that we have?
That is a possibility, yes. It's changed a little bit, well, it's changed a lot, actually. This year yet for the fall session will be like it has always been within the last recent several years, to where they do a portion of their training in two phases. One phase is the first one is online, and then they go out to the academy, then they spend 3 days out there. Then they come back, they complete the second phase of their training online, and then go back and do the last part of their things for firearm, defensive driving, things of that nature, and practical stuff that they have to do at the academy, and then they do their final testing out there. The way that it's being proposed now for the after this year is over, that the reserve deputies would need to attend the full 16-week basic as any full-time certified law enforcement officer would. So that is a big change. You're right. It doesn't mean that it would stay that way. It's a possibility it can change back the other way. It depends on the feedback that they get from administrators across the state to the PSAC board and things of that nature. They're going to have an influence on that. It may go good. It may go bad. I think they're going to try it this way and see how it goes. So that's where it stands, I guess, for the time being. It doesn't mean that it would completely rule out us hiring somebody. It would be a little bit probably unnatural for someone to take 16 weeks off to go to the academy. So, I mean, the chances of that happening are not very good that way.
And my question, I guess, maybe I'm just not up to date on IT stuff, but we go out and we buy a telephone that supposedly can reach all across the world, and it costs a couple $100. We go out and we buy a portable radio, and it costs between $5,000 and $6,000. Where we used to be able to put a radio in our car with a phone on it and could call everywhere. Why? Have we talked to other people, to other people besides Motorola, besides these communication people, to see what these radios might cost or what the equivalent of these radios would cost somewhere else? Or am I just so out of touch that I think that we need to spend $5,000 or $6,000 for a radio?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I guess the one thing is I think when Motorola, they've been here, you know, a few times and talked about their P25 compliant radios, which means that they're digital and law enforcement or first responder specific, meaning they're ruggedized, they're water resistant and all those things to meet the standard that is going to be forced upon us in the very near future by federal requirements. If you drop your cell phone in the toilet, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. The radios...
It'll work.
That's good for you. If you want to talk in, I guess that's your business. John, that, but anyway,
that's experience. Yeah. Experience is a great teacher.
If the radios that we have spec'd out, obviously, they meet those P25 compliance already. And so we could probably get cheaper radios, but not for the statewide system, because Motorola right now, these radios are what is spec'd and required by the user agreement with the state to have this type of radios. And currently Motorola is the only one that is approved to be on the statewide system. They're in the process of testing and evaluating other brands of radios that are supposed to be compatible with the statewide system. And they have tested some previous to this point, is what Mr. Jeffries has told us, and they didn't pass the requirements. So it's in the process. It's unfortunate of the timing. Maybe 2 or 3 years from now, there might be something cheaper. But as for right now, this is what's available to us at the time.
Yeah. Like, say, a Kenwood, just for example, that is similar. You're looking at what price? I mean, obviously, we haven't priced them, or they haven't been priced through the statewide system, but you're probably still looking at the same type of dollar figure for that type of equipment.
That's a valid point, but I don't know the answer to that. I think that's a dangerous slope to get onto,
yeah,
because I don't know the answer to that. We currently use most all of our radios right now are currently Kenwood radios. We've used them for probably back since the late 80s, I think. But they are not. That's one of the ones that they're looking at testing, is my understanding. But currently, they're not approved to be on the system.
And do you, off the top of your head, you or Gus, either one, the last time we bought radios?
The last time we bought radios, a very long time ago. Most of the radios that we currently have now, we probably bought 2 or 3 that I can think of, and those I think were in the jail. Most all of the radios that we have gotten through Homeland Security money through emergency management. That includes most of your rural fire agencies and the police department and the full-time fire department as well.
Which was just several years. It wasn't that far back.
Well, we've gotten a couple different groups over a couple different times, because all the Homeland Security money in Nebraska was dedicated towards communications. And that all started back, you know, probably, you know, I don't know the answer, 10 or 15 years ago. and all that money was designated for communications through Homeland Security because we couldn't get any other equipment through Homeland Security because in Nebraska it was all geared towards communication. And, you know, I'm pretty sure it was because they were starting the statewide system and that started laying that out and into that foundation for the upcoming things that are in place now.
Do you recall, Gus, what them last radios, when we purchased them, they were about 4,000?
What they cost?
Yeah.
Like a portable radio?
Yeah.
About $650.
Oh, they were that much cheaper.
Well, they're a straight UHF analog radio.
Completely different.
Completely different analog.
Completely different, yeah.
What is wrong with these?
What is wrong with these? There's nothing wrong with these, except it's the system that we utilize that we can't effectively communicate all the time. That's the problem.
These radios. What time can't we communicate?
I'm sorry?
When can't we communicate?
I would go out on a bit of a limb and say almost on a daily basis there are multiple times throughout our shifts that we cannot communicate.
Why?
I don't know.
Where are the two radios that you can't communicate?
I'm sorry?
Where are they that you can't communicate?
I don't know.
Where is Radio 1 and Radio 2 that won't communicate?
Well, sometimes they're in the city of Beatrice, and at other times they're at any given location throughout the county. And a lot of it's geographical, a lot of it's based on the weather, a lot of it's based on the current equipment that we have in the system and the size of our county and a lot of variables that are way beyond my capability of understanding.
Okay.
I got a timed event at 9:15, so we can continue this conversation in just a moment. I need a motion to close all bids for the highway striping project at 9:16.
I make a motion to close all bids on the highway striping project.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Vote 7-0.
One.
Get open.
One.
So maybe
you might have been here for three, though. Five or something.
Let Terry make a recommendation.
Do you want to rephrase to close the bid? Close all bids?
All bids.
One bid.
All bids. Same.
Is it a good one?
Yeah, I think mine probably is. It's the best.
Do we need to vote on it?
Did we get any the cost estimate to see, did Manelli say, is there an idea what he thought it would cost?
I believe the figure I remember was $960 a mile.
Okay.
Estimate.
Yes.
Yeah. $960 a mile. Okay.
I'm so sad.
Would you help me with
mine?
We can all remember that joke
about the guy. I'll get a radio from Klaus and I can communicate back and forth.
2 months on the second day of my
I'm sure of that.
We're all sure of that.
It's unanimous.
Okay, Matt, this loan bid is from Straight Line Striping Incorporated out of Grand Island, Nebraska. There's options on here, but basically what I saw in the estimate is basically what this is. There's three different, and there's two different time frames on these. The first ones are the original 40 miles that Galen went out and looked at and said there's basically no paint, no striping on these roads. So this was the first ones, and the time frame on this first estimate is May 1st to June 2nd, approximately 40 miles. And these are the, if anybody wants me to read them, they're these miles right here. These are original ones that are, no. These are original ones that are, yes? Okay. That basically, when Galen reviewed all the road systems, these were the worst of the worst. So we looked at doing those first. And this estimate was done. We had, I believe, Myron, $32,000 in this year's budget for this type of work. The second phase of it then was for the armor coating roads. Again, I think that's approximately 45 miles of overlay, and that second phase of it is August 1st to September 1st that those roads will be done. So needless to say, I'll break it down just like it's stated. Edge striping only, both sides, per mile price, $640 per mile. Center line and no passing stripes only. Contract to determine no passing zones, per mile bid price, $320. Edge striping, both sides, center line, no passing stripes. Contract to determine no passing zones, per mile price, $960. If I remember correctly, that's exactly what the estimate was when they originally looked at it. But Galen can review that.
Question about the comment in there that the contractor determines the passing and no passing zones. Is that they're allowed to do that, so they can determine?
They've always done it for Gage County ever since I've been involved in it.
And there's a standard that they use.
Yeah, there's some standard they use. I don't know for sure how they do it, but they do.
And do we review that so just for some crazy reason they allowed you to pass on the top of a hill? Who's ultimately responsible?
Well, if you're Gage County,
you'd
be ultimately
responsible. Okay, I didn't know we left that up to the contract.
I think it's the guy driving the truck when he turns the switch on.
Well, that's no.
but, no, I mean, some cigarette ashes, yeah. Goes a little farther.
No, I don't know.
I'll briefly go run down the miles that are on this first segment. No.
You don't have. We've
I mean, there's you know, that's a fine. Dozen different roads throughout the county.
Terry, were those bids the same for both?
Yeah, and they are the same for the first group of miles as the second group of miles, exactly identical. The first group, approximately 40 miles. The second group, approximately 45 miles is what there is total. So, and this second group is, like I say, basically the armor coat miles that will be done in May here. And as soon as the gravel, you don't want to do them right away because a lot of that material could move before. Basically the armor coat miles is what the second group is. So,
Keelan, is this the same company that you worked with before, or is this different? The same company and stuff. So,
Matt, do we need to?
I need a motion to accept the bids. You make the motion, but probably contingent on review for some reason. But they've done it before. We've worked with them in the past, so I just need a motion to accept the bid.
Well, I guess I'd like to make a motion to accept the bid from Straight Line Striping, Inc. out of Grand Island, Nebraska.
Moved by Juergens.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Any further discussion? And again, this contingent on Galen reviewing that, and then if for some reason there's something squirrely.
Contingent on Galen and Mark reviewing this to make sure that it meets the specifications in the bid.
Okay. Further discussion or comments? Seeing none, vote 7-0 to approve. Okay, you want to go back and want to talk radios again?
Yeah.
I've got some comments.
I mean, I thanks Doug for bringing up the grant from the homestead. I don't know. I think a lot of us found out about that in the past week or whatever. But I can't, like I talked to you, can't express enough how much to thank Mark and them for doing the legwork. Mark Engler and Mark Mines both and everybody, and then getting the grant and what that helps out with this project. I think that's quite an accomplishment and quite a good thing to have that we were able to get that. For them out there, it meant enough that they applied for this and everything to help us out, and then that this will help us out with the $50,000 for this. And I mentioned to you that when we had our discussion about not having as many handhelds, that was part of the discussion when we got the grant also now maybe why even have the discussion, but I think we decided it was prudent at this time that we do have this discussion, that are they all needed or not, and the amount of money involved in there, and that we even had in part of that discussion, I don't know if I brought it up or somebody else did, you know, in the next 5 years, can you do without the 5 or 10 handhelds, and replace those with two sheriff's cars, because in the next couple, 3 years or something, we're going to be wanting some more vehicles or whatever. And we're just looking at dollars on some of these, and it's the one thing that doesn't get in that part of the conversation is the safety, and that's something that you guys deal with out there every day that we can't put a price tag on that over here. We can put a price tag on 10 handhelds and say we're going to save $58,000 or whatever, but we can't put a price tag on safety. Did talk with Tony, and I apologize, I can't remember his last name, from Motorola. And talked to him quite a bit about some specific things on these handhelds. The old handhelds that they have now, one of the issues always has been is batteries and the life of the batteries. These new handhelds, in the chargers and in the handhelds themselves, there are computer chips now so that it will read. And if you only use 20% of the charge out of that thing, when you put it in that charger, it's only going to charge back to the 100% and shut off. A lot of the old ones, they charge you a full charge whether you needed it or not. The battery life on those old ones was a lot more of an issue. I know, too, because on our rescue squad, those handhelds, if you had a problem, a lot of times it was a battery. They've developed the system so that, he said, the battery life is just a whole lot longer. They don't basically burn them out by overcharging them and stuff. One of the other things, and Doug, you correct me if I'm wrong on this, but this handheld now here can talk to the state system and our old ones, right? It has a dial.
The portable radio.
The portable ones, yes. Yes, and that is a lot of the reason for the cost, too. What you have as an issue is you may have, if you have a squad out there, whatever, fire or whatever, and they have all the old handhelds yet that talk on the system we have today.
UHF.
With these new ones, you will be able to talk to them. But you won't be able to talk to the state system and them at the same time. I mean, you can't talk both of them. You're going to be on one or the other. That is another... Tony pointed out that's another, I don't know, feature or thing of this handheld or whatever that is good to have in there so that you are out somewhere, you can communicate with them or whatever. One of the things he talked about, and I forgot to bring this up at committee meeting, I asked him about, well, what if we don't get 10 of them now and over the next 5 years we slowly pick up 10 those 10, we get those and order those. He said the one thing you could be looking at is, he says, is upgrades. How much different will they be than the ones you currently have? He says everybody you have will be trained on the one we're getting today. He says, don't know. He says, I can't even tell you that. They get upgraded or as they deem necessary or as new technology comes out or when there's something better, then they'll get upgraded. He said, we may go 5 years and not really basically not upgrade anything. He says, we could go 2 years, and he said, we could have a fairly different handheld system. He says, we don't know that. He says, that's just a thing out there that you need to be aware of. That was his comment or whatever and stuff. So,
I would just comment real quick on one thing about that very, very thing. And I think you talked a little bit about batteries here, and I think overall for the sheriff's office, for the jail, and for emergency management, I think this sheet is the most accurate and up-to-date one we have. We had spec'd out 6 spare batteries total for 52 portable radios. That would give, like, the jail one, the sheriff's office maybe a couple, emergency management a few of them. If we would look at buying portable radios into the future, the comment that you already made about it might be a little different feature and this and that. The thing that I would just throw out there, one thing we're trying to get away from is we have some Kenwood TK380s, some 10 390s, another smaller version like the one I have on versus the NX300s versus the one emergency management have. They all take different batteries. What we're trying to do is get everything to one battery,
the thing that he talked about with the 10%, 20% charge and things like that, well, a couple of those we expect out in these gang chargers, these bank chargers, all these those chargers and the batteries, that they, the chip that you're talking about is called the Impress technology. And what that technology does is that does exactly what it does, is it reads the battery. It can tell you how many times it's been cycled, how many times it's charged, what the serial number of the battery is, and it works for all the batteries for all the portables we have across the board. If we start getting something different, then we have to start getting different chargers, and we don't, you know, we get different batteries, and then we, right now I've got, you know, two of this one sitting on the shelf in case somebody needs a new battery. Two of those, you know, we've got all these different batteries, and, you know, I mean, these batteries are, you know,
$107 a piece.
$105. Some of the ones we get now, you know, they range in a variety from, you know, $48 or $50 to maybe, you know, $80 or $90. But I guess that's one thing we want to try and get away from, is having a bunch of extra batteries sitting around, you know, for different radios, and then they go in the trash because they've sat for so many years they won't take a charge anymore. So that was, we'd like to keep things consistent, the same across the board is what we're trying to achieve.
Tony and I also had the conversation about life of these portables. I said, you know, one of the times he was here, I remember I said the 10 years, you know, or whatever. And he said, you could have a few of your handhelds only last 5 years. He says, we've got some Motorola handhelds that are out there 15 and 20 years old, he says.
We have some radios currently like that that are 15 and 20 years old that we do use still occasionally. I mean, it's not every day. Some of our non-essential personnel might use those for talking back and forth for administrative things and things of that nature. But, I mean, all the radios we've ever had, Ebola's treated us pretty good, I guess.
But he also made the comment, he says, I'll put that 10-year number out there, he said, and make people aware of the fact that
sure.
In 5 years you better start saving money.
Right. Well, that's a possibility.
Not a problem. That's an issue that county government has, saving money to buy radios. And we found that out here, you know, and by the amount of this, what the bill is for this or whatever and stuff.
Sure.
So, but I'll say one more thing. Tony's a salesman, okay, with his comments. But I thought he was very forward and honest with what he said or whatever and stuff. But I had something else too here. Oh, he also mentioned, and I think you've mentioned too, and what we financially we can't take into consideration, and that is the safety. He said he's got some relation that are on some of the, I thought he said one was a state patrolman. And he said their family sleeps a lot better at night knowing that when that person's out there on the road, he's got a handheld that they know that's going to work. Now, like I said, we don't take that into account when we're talking money.
That might mean something or nothing. But, I mean, it's
and that's where I said he's a salesman, but he also brought out I thought a really valid point there, because it you guys put your life on the line out there a lot of times. We don't. We just sit here and talk money and safety concern, but we're not in your shoes. So I will say that. But back to why we are proposing the 10 less, I guess a lot of our discussion centered around, do we really need 52 handhelds? Because if we, as we all looked at all of this proposal and this project, if there's one place we would first start to cut, it's the handhelds. And a lot of us didn't even talk amongst ourselves. And then when one of us brought up about, well, should we cut 10 out of it, I was surprised there was four or five of us said, well, I thought the same thing. You know, can we cut 10 handhelds? And that's why we're having the discussion. That's why I called you. And
sure.
That's why we're
understanding. And I want to make a point that there is never in one of my thoughts that I don't think about the safety of our deputies and their staff. But I think in terms of that in communication and what we can do communicating, what we're doing now in the safety of our staff, what we'll do in the future. And I think there are times that we might go overboard relative to that issue. And we need to think through it. And that's what we're doing. We're having the discussion
yes.
so that we can think through these things. And what is it that makes you more safe? What is it that makes the citizens of this county more safe? That is important
yes.
in the communication. But how do we do it, but do it effectively? And when I hear all these candidates out here running for governor tell us how they're going to cut back on all the property taxes and they're going to cut out how much money is spent on local level, And I think of those people getting elected, whoever it is, and what are they going to do to the counties and how are we going to afford to operate? So, anyway, I do think of the safety of our...
And Doug, I also told you yesterday, that's why we wanted to have the discussion today. Next committee meeting, we can maybe go ahead and have some more discussion on it. And when we vote on this, I didn't want to have this discussion the day we vote on this and risk not passing
this. And I appreciate that. I just two more quick things. One on the contract. We had talked a little bit about, I said Jeffries was supposed to be getting that to us either this week or the very first part of next week. When I went back and checked my emails, late Friday sometime, I think it was, he had sent a draft. As he said, it's a real ragged, rough draft, he said, but look it over. So I've gotten to page 6 up to this point. There's 15 pages, I think it was, if I remember right. So as soon as I get that reviewed, I've already made a couple corrections on there. Then I'll get it to Roger after it's reviewed with the sheriff. Then we'll get it back again, and when we feel we're comfortable with it, we'll send it back to Jeffries for review again and any other updates or modifications, and then he'll send it back, and then we'll try and get that out as soon as we can. But I haven't even got to the last pages to see what the final numbers are. Keep in mind, I guess, a little bit in the discussion about the money part of it is the project overall cost has come way down from what we originally planned that it would cost us. With the better pricing, number one, and we cut back and reduced things to what we felt up there. We got rid of some options that we felt weren't necessary and some things along those lines, ready to save some money and come back with that. And the talk, and hopefully it's what the contract says, is that the state would agree to take over the tower, and they would have agreed verbally at this point, and I can't say what it says yet in the contract, to pay for all the shelter and generator remediations and upgrades of that. That was estimated to be between $30,000 and $50,000. We're saving that money with another $50,000, you know, so we're saving anywhere from $80,000 to $100,000 plus the $12,000 to $14,000 cheaper than what we had come across. So essentially, in our mind, we've already saved $100,000+, I guess, is what our thought is. And the safety is the biggest thing that we think about, I guess. I mean, I don't want this to sound wrong. If it was a motor grader or if it was a piece of equipment we needed, we would get bids, we would talk about it, justify the need, and we would, you know, have the discussion and a vote. And I guess, I feel it's appropriate that we come to a conclusion on this at some point, you know, here, and hopefully we can do that on the 14th. And, you know, if the decision is to have a few less radios, then I guess that's what we'll do. We would ask, you know, for the amount that we have, because we have already felt, you know, that we've cut these down to what our needs are for now and the near future, without having the, you know, possibility of different radios being spec'd and have different accessories, et cetera, with them and go that route. So that's where we're at, I guess, overall, and I appreciate your time.
This isn't a question, but it's more of a comment. I think that when we make the decision on how many radios we are going to buy, we need to make that decision not based on the Homestead grant, because we should be purchasing what we need to have and not say, oh, we've got $50,000 here, so now we can buy all of these upgrades. The savings are great, and that's what we're supposed to do, is look for any savings that we can find and save as many taxpayer dollars.
And that's what I told Myron. It would be real easy to get greedy and say, hey, let's get a couple more of these. We got $50,000, you know.
Right.
But the point that I had made with Myron is, I guess, this deployable incident command kit, and my God, I hate to even bring it up again, but that is something I feel, you know, if the Homestead National Monument, they're contributing this through the Department of Interior, this $50,000, you know, the $16,000 or $20,000 portion of that, you know, for the deployable incident command kit, is a piece of equipment that would directly benefit them. You know, anytime that they have had events out there and we have set up a portable repeater system with the UHF thing to guarantee communication, you know, and stuff like that, I think that's a good valuable piece of equipment that would benefit not only us but them as well, and it would help, you know, help them spending their money, would contribute that back and forth to each other.
And Doug, when you get to, you know, where the contract from Jeffries addresses the tower, can you let us know what that is? And maybe...
I'll get you a whole copy of the contract, okay, so you can good. All see exactly what we're talking about so that I don't try and interpret something differently than what it is.
Sounds good.
I just have a little bit of heartache of people having radios that aren't currently on the job and working. The reservist, I'm not in favor of people taking those home. You know, just, you know, I would be a little more aggressive and probably Act 15. I don't know that the emergency management department needs 8. You know, but just I'm going through looking at these. How many people are working in the corrections office at any one time?
And those numbers fluctuate, and that's why we have to be able to figure for the maximum amount of staffing at any given time, I guess, is where some of that has come with instead of buying an individual charger and stuff for each radio for the jail like that, you know, so we buy a bank charger that's a smart charger that we talked about so that those are constantly in a good state. And as they come in, and it might be where they have 2 full-time corrections working all the time, they have some part-time people in training or whatever, that they might bring 1 or 2 of those in, or an additional one comes in to go on a transport or to help over here at the metal detector when we have a trial over district court. So that's how we base those numbers on, I guess.
But my biggest heartache is the ones that sit there with the reserve deputies when they report. Do they report to the sheriff's station? They can pick up?
It depends on where the incident is, right?
We've got, obviously, the discussion the folks that have them, get them the good equipment, make sure it works. Let's have that. But right now we've got 2 deputies and no emergency manager, and at this point as we're in transition and we're operating, and 4 spares sitting there, even if everyone had one in the old system. You know, Motorola used to be a Six Sigma company. I would hope that they're with regard to quality.
We
have a lot of spares. Are those spares waiting for people to come and pick them up? Are they to replace the ones that we're anticipating are going to break? And so, again, Motorola, again, used to be, I believe they're still a Six Sigma company with regard to liability and quality, and so... I'm just saying,
sure.
If we could look at those numbers and come back, because it's a good point about the vehicles, that would have been 2 additional trucks for $50-some thousand.
Matt, explain what you're saying there about being a Six Sigma company.
That has to, if you look at the Six Sigma, has to go, if you look at a bell curve and how many standard deviations of failure, and the further you get out, and it's the interval on the end of the spectrum of failure, and the further out you get, the less failure you have. So if you're the sigma in statistics, if you go 6 sigma out, it's basically no failure, and so it's a standard that a company can receive for having very good products. And I think back when they had pagers, they were designated as a 6 sigma company, and so that's a basically no failure at all. I mean, it's the...
Well, you could have brought that up sooner when we were talking about the quality of these radios, Matt.
Well, no, but I mean, Motorola used to be, I mean, that was kind of, you can read about Six Sigma, and that's kind of the basic explanation of...
And all we care is if they work or not. That's the big thing, yeah.
So we would consider Gus a Six Sigma sheriff, maybe. Very little failure.
Could afford it, you know.
Anyway, so I just when I look at the spares, I was like, what's a spare? Is a spare waiting for somebody? So if we got the reserves, technically, if they're not using those could be spares.
Right. And I don't want
are we
the
waiting
word,
for failure of product?
The word spare to come up is something that sounds like, you know, hey, we just got a bunch laying around. You know, it's we always have to have a certain amount on hand because Motorola, Six Sigma, whatever or not, you know, Kenwood, I don't know what they are, but... We have an issue with the shoulder mic. We have an issue with the speaker not working. You might receive it. You might not transmit. We got to send it in to get it repaired. And in the meantime, you know, we have to have something to issue out to the other individual, I guess. So the word spare is a little bit, you know.
It's a lot of money.
Sounds like a bad term for what we're trying to say. But.
And this question is for Joe, but do you have any comment on, you know, the number of spares for the emergency management? Where it came from, or?
Well, Joe Hawkins, the only thing that I can say that I had experience with one exercise that we had, which was a search and rescue exercise for a tornado strike at the homestead.
Uh-huh.
At that time, we had CERT teams out. We issued out 12 radios, 12 handhelds. And we had a few left over. Had there been more people to partake of the exercise, we could have issued radios. In the event that something happens in the real world like that, whereas an actual tornado strike, say the homestead or anywhere else where there could be a lot of people in a large area that could be injured, There's places your cell phone's not going to work. And if you don't have radios, you can't communicate back and forth what you need to do. I guess I look forward seeing that there is a possibility this could happen. The odds are sooner or later it's going to happen. We're going to have it happen again, another tornado.
Certainly.
And if we're caught shorthanded and we can't communicate, we're just putting a lot of people at risk, in my opinion. Not only the people in the field, but citizens.
And I guess, and this really probably isn't for you, but the one comment I would have is they kept talking about the training for the radios. And if it's like a search and rescue mission, you know, would these extra people have already had this training? I mean, they're probably going to be people that...
I'm sure that, like the CERT teams, people that are going to be helping to do the rescue, search and rescue things, will receive some training on how to use those radios, because it would be of no value if they didn't.
Right. And the time to train them isn't in the crisis.
No.
Yeah.
It's not.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else? Okay, thank you.
No more discussion. All right. Human resource, employee relations.
No report.
Law enforcement, emergency management.
Okay. Well, communications again. I don't think we need to go any further.
You want to go over that again?
No, I think we're good. Gus did have a report on, had a little bit of good news, I guess you'd say, where we have not too many things to repair now, but I guess to just open it up for Gus to go ahead and let the public know where we stand on that.
Well, we got a new fire marshal. And so when that transition was done there, I invited him down. From the last fire marshal we had, two main things remained to be done. It's a couple of installation of fire doors. Those were completed enough that I felt I could have this new one come down and take a look. He was gracious enough to get down here within about 4 weeks. He's walked through the facility for me. He signed off on the two doors that were installed, but there are some other, he wants another door installed on the old sheriff's living quarter for fire separation from first floor to the second floor. And I think there's some handrails he wants put in and a few fire extinguishers mounted instead of just sitting on a cabinet. So overall, I didn't bleed too bad on that. I was pretty happy over that. So we're working through that process with that. Hopefully we get those things done before fall. And my hope is then when he comes back down and does our annual inspection before Jill Standards does theirs, we should hopefully pass this year after about 5 years. So that's the good news. Nothing real bad came out of it. I knew he'd find something. I kind of just part of the job. But overall, that was it. So not bad at all.
Yeah, for what we've had in the past few years, that's pretty minor. So it's, like I said, it is a tad bit of good news, really.
Yeah, I'd hold my breath because I heard some things. So, it went pretty well. So, shouldn't be a lot of money invested there. It's just a matter of getting it down to make it really happy. So,
as far as that, Myron, was there really anything else that we had to cover, or Matt or John?
I had the paperwork here somewhere, but.
For what I had, that was pretty much it.
Yep.
Yeah. No. Way. No. No good.
Road and bridge. Tentatively, the Philly Bridge project tentative start date's May 19th. Sounds like a pretty good time to start. Time of year wise, anyway. Spring weed notices have went out. In all three papers. The rest of the stuff we reviewed, we've been working on Hickory Road. Hopefully scheduling a second landowner meeting in May sometime to visit with the people, kind of tell them, where we're at, where we're going, discussions with Norse. Also are ongoing. Last week, on the 17th, Mark Manili came down to the highway department, and actually Deb put together a listing of the projects throughout the county for this year that has to get done. And Mark came down, kind of went through the projects, what his expectations were, you know. Same with me, you know, we fully intend to get these projects done. With that being said, I guess my comment was that I think we have to pick up the pace a little bit to get it all done. So I think that's being done. We've got good weather ahead of us, the way it sounds, so I expect to see a lot of work done now there from here on out the rest of summer. So
I'll make one comment. I know when we were going through some of these bid projects, especially for the road bond and stuff, Mark kept making a comment that, you know, get this bid process out there early because we'll get better bids and cheaper bids. And in the last month, I think several times seen in the paper, I know one time it was up in Lincoln there, they rejected the bids because they came in quite a bit over the estimate and stuff. And I know down at that meeting made the comment that because of our bids coming in as low as they did, we were able to do some other projects here in the county, so armor coat a bunch more roads, and then do some culvert projects with that bond money. And I think it's a contribute to Galen and Deborah and Mark and everybody for doing that, putting that all together, and laying out the framework what we did to the benefit of this county, that we were able to do a bunch of these projects and get them done because of the work they did and expedient work, I guess, you know, to get the bids out there. So that's really helped.
On every one of those projects, the timing just did seem to be about right. I mean, the overlays tied in with 77 project. That's why that bid, I feel that bid came in cheap because of the existing project constructors had going right there. They're going to set up the plan anyway. It's a huge savings, yeah. You know, to mobilize that plant, you know. So the timing on everything, we were lucky it hit just right. So we did get good prices, I believe, yeah.
And I was so thankful we had all the bids we had for those projects, especially on the day here, we just had one, you know, and I don't know why we had just one, but I was glad we had, you know, that one project, we had five bids on that, which was fantastic compared to here, because I remember two years ago, we didn't even get a bid or something. I can't even remember what that was for, remember?
Sheetrock bid at one point for something Gus had, and I think we had one bid.
Project over there. We didn't get any bids.
Beg somebody up.
I had to beg him to come down and do it. Yeah. So I mean, it, and you never know. You don't know why or whatever. But pretty soon the construction or the road closings in the area will be noticeable. Yeah. So. And the school, talked to a couple of school people up there at Adams, and they sure appreciate you waiting till about the 19th to start on the bridge. They know this fall ought to be an issue, but thank you, they said, for, you know, school's basically done then and stuff, so.
Okay. All right. Next, I need a motion to approve or disapprove giving notice to review the University of Nebraska Extension Service Interlocal Agreement.
Move to approve.
Move by Lytle.
Seconded
by Dorn. Discussion.
Had a chance to talk to Paul a little bit about it. Not a lot yet. Tried to get a hold of him Monday again, went out there to visit, and they apparently Monday and yesterday they've been at some conferences and stuff. So we'll get a hold of him and visit a little bit with him and show him what some of we had. And Don did get some copies of some other counties that I'm looking at, too, to make sure that we're not leaving something out or whatever, so we'll keep visiting on that here.
Most of those look fairly like somebody put one together and all the counties.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what it looks like, yeah. You change some numbers or, yeah. So.
Vote 7-0. We'll give them notice. All right. Nothing else. Last, I need a motion to go to closed session.
Oh, I got one more quick thing. N-Gage, a little bit of update on N-Gage. Glennis McClure didn't start on the 21st. Unfortunately, her brother passed away the Friday before. So she didn't start then until she did some few things later in the week or whatever. She is fully intending to come here and visit with the board, but this meeting she couldn't, and the next meeting too. She's at a conference out in Kearney at the next meeting, so she called me to let me know, and I said, well, I'll let you know. And She's going to send out emails, and Doug, if Doug left or whatever, our meeting next time, Scott, right now, trying to get it scheduled for the 12th. That'd be a Monday. Instead of that Thursday, it'd be a Monday. So just kind of heads up. So don't have it scheduled for then yet, but because she's – that's part of that conference out in Kearney and stuff. So then she's looking at that, and I think it's going to work for everybody, but it's not official, but that's a plan. So.
Okay. All right, so I need a motion to go to a closed session, discuss personnel for the protection and needless injury to reputation of an individual or necessary for the protection of public interest.
Moved. To go into closed session.
Moved by Setzer. Sorry, Dawn, the clerk was talking to me as I'm looking this.
I know, because I...
I just were covered there. I need a second.
Second.
Second by Dorn. Vote. 7-0. There'll be no action. This will be the last thing we do.
If we hadn't got a second, we wouldn't.
Come out of closed session, 11:06.
So move. Come out of session, 11:06.
By Gary.
Second.
By Dorn. Vote. 7-0. Come out of closed session. Anything else for the board? Anything else?
I can write it down.
So we'll look for the information coming to Roger as far as that contract goes for communications.
So we will have, want to make note that the Finance Committee will meet at 9 o'clock in our next committee, set of committee meetings, and the building grounds will be at 10.
So we'll bump all that up, Don.
Is that right?
Yeah. We had quite a discussion later, and that's what we just decided that at least we're going to try it. If finance starts later in 9, so be it, you know. But just because ever since we've gone to this structure or this format.
Terry's kind of gotten quiet.
Yeah. We're quicker, and that way we just don't have to sit here and wait and feel obligated to wait on Denny or whatever. Denny was more than happy to come at 9 o'clock.
All right, we will stand adjourned at 11:07.
Yep. That's when we had him.
All right. We're just having such a problem with